Does this figure of 12 million people on a waiting list surprise you?
No, it doesn't surprise me. And I'm sure there's a lot that is actually hidden. Because not only, as your previous caller said, they were waiting to even see the consultants to get on to the waiting list. But there is another waiting list of people waiting to see their GP to get a referral to the consultant and then maybe for a scan. And if you look at those so-called class four surgeries, which are supposed to be the sort of lowest priority, still you could have a patient with cataracts that is hardly able to see. You could have a patient in severe pain from their hip. To each of those patients, it's not a routine surgery. There is no such thing for the patient as routine surgery.
There is something like 130,000 people in this country who have died of COVID or with COVID, Tony. Do you think that the non-COVID death toll will be higher than that when you look at these figures?
I think it will absolutely be higher. I think it will be very difficult, though, to identify because... or that there are many, many patients that have missed their cancer screening, many patients that have not even got through the GP gatekeeper to get their cancer screening appointment yet. There's 450 patients every day die from cancer at the moment. That's before any COVID effects, versus maybe 10 people a day that are dying, I wouldn't say with COVID, but with a positive test, which may be a very different thing. If we look at those 140,000, 150,000 COVID deaths, they will not be all people that have died of COVID. It's quite difficult to work out the balance. But I think the NHS now has been asked specifically to record the patients that have died with a positive test and the patients that have died of and caused by COVID. So I think the non-COVID deaths will dwarf the so-called COVID deaths, but they'll be spread out over the next 5 or 10 years. The problem is with cancer diagnoses, roughly, if a cancer is found early, there's probably a 90% chance of curing that. If a cancer diagnosis is found late, it's probably exactly the other way around, maybe 10% chance of curing that. And for the 90%, maybe multiple treatments, multiple operations that still sadly result in the patient's death. And many of those patients, of course, are younger patients than the people that have died with COVID. They're patients that are maybe looking after young children. In fact, the only statistic really we need is the one you raised in your original monologue, which is that the average age of death in this country is 82. The average age of a COVID death is 83. That really tells you all you need to know about the overreaction that we've made. If you look at Spanish flu 100 years ago, the average age of death then was around about 60. The people that died of Spanish flu had an average age of 28. Very different. They lost half of their life catching the Spanish flu. This isn't Spanish flu.
Now, why do you think the NHS is facing such a massive waiting list, Tony? What do you put this down to?
Well, the NHS always has a waiting list and has always had a waiting list problem. And the NHS... I started in the NHS in 1984, and every single winter, there was a winter crisis. Partly, we have far fewer beds in the NHS than, for instance, the German system. Certainly far fewer ITU beds than the German system. And since 1984, the number of beds in the NHS has reduced enormously. So I think politicians at the moment are trying to use the current COVID situation to cover up problems with the NHS that have been there for a long time. And they're not problems of the frontline, hardworking doctors and nurses trying to do their job despite the people at the top of the NHS. I would say you're fighting to do your job and you want to be left alone to get on with it. But there's constant changes and constant interference that just make your job more difficult.
What is the reality, Tony, for my listeners when they get back to using the NHS post-pandemic, given this backlog? How will it feel? I mean, will it take longer to get a GP's appointment? If you have an accident, is A&E going to be a problem? What might be the tangible consequences?
No, I don't think anyone needs to worry about a problem that is severe enough that they need to go to A&E. That will always be prioritised and that will always be dealt with. It is the thing that interfere with people's lives, that cause pain, that cause misery, but aren't dangerous to their life, really, are the things that are going to be difficult. The problem is at the moment is that some GPs are getting back into doing more face-to-face consultations. There's still a lot of sort of video consultations and phone consultations, which may be fine if you just want a repeat prescription. But if it's a patient talking about some lump they found, it needs to be seen, it needs to be examined. And I'm not clever enough to do my consultations on the phone or video. I see all my patients face-to-face. But there are lots of restrictions. So the restrictions at the moment still about how many chairs you can have in the waiting room because of these COVID restrictions. So if you could only have 5 people in your waiting room that would normally fit 20, that obviously reduces hugely how many patients a GP can see face-to-face. So it's the things that bother people a lot that aren't necessarily dangerous that will be pushed to the back of the queue. But the problem is, lots of those patients as well may then be found to have something more serious once they get seen.
Because it's obviously had a chance to get worse, Tony.
And absolutely.
Prevention is better than cure. What about the policy of sending doctors, nurses, surgeons, other health professionals home because they've been pinged by the COVID app, even if they haven't got COVID? I mean, that was thousands of missing staff throughout the last 14 months.
It could have been much worse, but lots of doctors and lots of junior doctors have been told by their bosses to turn off their COVID app because if they get pinged and have to go home, there's no staff left. So a lot of doctors just turn that off because otherwise you'd never be around. It is a totally mad way of doing things. One of my anaesthetic colleagues that had COVID, proven on a PCR test, proven to have antibodies, was then contacted by Test and Trace about 2 months later. That person, that anaesthetist, spoke to the management and said, I want to stay at work. I'm safe to stay at work. I've had COVID. I'm perfectly safe. And they were told by the management, no, they had to have 10 days off.
And that sort of stupid decision could cost lives.
Absolutely. It's nuts. I mean, there are a lack of anaesthetists now. And there are even more nutty things going on. A recent anaesthetic training scheme, which usually takes 450 junior anaesthetists on each year. This year, for some weird reason, it's been decided by some NHS body, not the College of Anaesthetists, that they only need 150. They only need to take on a third of what they normally take on. Well, that's just mad, that there's no proper planning. And that sort of thing should be left to the doctors and the College of Anaesthetists. There's no need for managers to get involved in how many of a particular specialty are needed. They've got no idea.
Tony, if I could clear up a couple of other issues with you.
Yep.
What's your view on children being vaccinated against COVID-19?
Well, I've only recently got involved in speaking to the media, doing lots of stuff on Twitter. I've had lots and lots of concerns about the way COVID has been dealt with, the harms of lockdown, cancer patients being missed, the way children have been treated at school. But the thing that really got me out in the public, if you like, and putting my sort of career on the line is kids' vaccinations. It is just a red line. Kids do not get almost any problems with COVID, certainly not severe problems. The number of children below 16 that have died with COVID that have no serious underlying conditions is zero. Then people talk about long COVID as a reason to vaccinate children. I don't call it long COVID. It should be called long lockdown syndrome. This is symptoms that children have got from what we as a society have done to children. We'd never do that to our own children. Our grandparents would never do it. And then people say we should be vaccinating children to protect their grandparents. Well, my kids' grandparents say, don't put my grandchildren at risk to do anything that may protect me. We can take our own vaccine. So kids get no benefit from taking this vaccine. There's nothing for them to gain. There are increasing risks being shown. In the United States, there are more and more, particularly young men and boys down to age 12, developing a condition called myocarditis, which is inflammation of the heart muscle. That may kill off some of your heart muscle. Same as what happens when you have a heart attack. It repairs, but it doesn't repair with heart muscle. It repairs with scar tissue that can cause all sorts of problems in later life. Arrhythmias, which is a very strange heart rhythm that can cause problems, maybe the pacemaker, premature death. I mean, this COVID vaccination for children is all of the risk, none of the benefit. The JCVI, the British, the UK doctors looking at vaccine safety, are currently looking at this, and I think what they will come out with is that we shouldn't be vaccinating children until we have more data. That's basically what the German equivalent said. And the American group was supposed to be meeting today, and they've delayed their meeting until next week. I suspect they're under a lot of political pressure, because I suspect they may say we need to just do a pause.
Now, it's clear, Tony, finally, that the COVID virus didn't actually cause this damage. It was lockdown policy. Can the NHS ever fully recover from this?
We have to do a number of things. We, first of all, absolutely have to stop testing healthy people. This is just nuts. We've gone from the lowest numbers in Europe about 2 weeks ago to the highest numbers in Europe. But when you take into account the amount of testing we do, compared to, say, Germany, per test, we're still lower than Germany. It's just the extra testing that makes it look like that. So if we get into the winter, and again, people will come with respiratory diseases, some of those will have positive COVID tests, whether they've got COVID or not. Lots of them are false positives. And my nightmare is that we get into this just same system again. Protect the NHS, segregating all these patients, when the vast majority of the patient of the population is vaccinated. In a normal year, maybe 20,000 people might die of flu. I don't believe for 1 second that flu disappeared last year. It's been relabeled. Why? If we normally checked everybody that dies in a winter for flu, almost certainly, the people dying with a positive flu test will be hugely higher than the people we label as dying of flu. But we don't normally test for it. But of course, COVID, we are. So we have to stop this testing of healthy people. It should be a clinical diagnosis.
Tony, we could do 3 hours on this. I really want to thank you so much for joining us. I want to thank your colleague Gemma at theheartgroup.org for helping to organise the interview. Heart is a collection of scientists who are challenging the current lockdown narrative.